all the program notes and things like that are done. Now, this is a difficult day for me because I have to deal with a lot of people that I don't like, or at least a few people that I don't like. And when you have a difficult topic to speak about, you sometimes can break into it by doing something off the wall. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about, oops, here comes somebody. Good morning.
Can I say something?
Guten Morgen. So we'll start with talking about Superman. And in the description of Superman, we're taught that he's faster than a speeding bullet. He's so fast that he can play ping pong with himself. And he can spike every time, and he can return it every time. But we're much more interested in the speeding bullet than we are interested in ping pong. We've probably all been in that discussion when we have talked about when common sign destiny becomes fixed sign destiny. We talk about, you know, we can think about things and we can plan things, or we can see problems ahead and we can find potential solutions to them so they don't become calamities. But sometimes it comes to the point that once the trigger has been pulled, then all of the thinking and all the deliberating are over. It's too late then. You have put a cause into action that is virtually the deed. It's irretrievable. And there's no stopping the bullet unless you're Superman. And since none of us are Superman, we've had that experience in destiny. We could see something coming all along, and we dilly-dallied in a common sign kind of way, and that's what happens. Now, it's pretty good advice to recognize, to tell people or for them to recognize that there is a state where there is a point of no return, and that if we continue collecting causes or proceeding with something that's going to be a cause that's going to have dreadful consequences, we can talk about that for a long time or think about it for a long time, but somehow we hang on to our causes. Even when our causes are terrible vices, we hang on to them as if they were pearls of great price. Now, implicit in the fact of this occurring, when something becomes irretrievable and we set a cause into action, that action results in a deed. It results in an event. And in an event, a cause becomes a consequence. And the reactive side of cause and consequence, or action and reaction, is activated, even though it may have been coming a long time already, because sometimes we always think we can change, but we don't realize how deep something is under our skin, and maybe we really can't change it until the consequence comes along and we suffer. We won't be able to change, or we won't be able to recognize the seriousness of things. Of course, if the consequence still has the momentum of the cause, so that it continues to produce other causes, until the things are scattered all over the place, it's much harder to control. We've all been in those kinds of situations where we set so much in motion that we can't stop it all. in pool. If you're playing pool, we're talking about playing pool again. This is it is an exhibition of where I've come from in the past. But in pool, it's much harder to control the pool ball after the first event, after you struck the first ball. You can do it if you're really very expert. They do it in those fancy tricks that they show you. And it's like that with cause and consequence also. It's easy to cause before the first event, but when the first event starts a chain reaction and consequences become further causes, it's hard to control that. You can't always know that. So we're trying to get at events, events when causes become consequences. They change things, and they change things quite differently. That's what history is all about. Yes, there are repetitive cyclical things that happen in history, but it's always new. And there are always changes to some effect. Before an event, sometimes we don't understand the causal agency in ourselves. It's subconscious to us. It's internal to us. But once it becomes an event, it's been externalized. And when it is externalized, it is obvious. You know, we can't lie to ourselves about events. If we flop, or if we're ill, or if we produce something that is of great beauty, we can't lie about that. So when there is an event and a cause becomes manifest, that's very clearly a statement of, by their fruits you shall know them. And what was within us unconsciously, either in a higher unconscious of our spirit or in the baser, lower nature, our fruits show what we were or what we are. Now, it's not only through causes or through events that causes are defined. Causes have consequences which are definitions of themselves. They are subjects that become objects. There is objectification. This is why the principle of action is so important, which is the principle of action is another name for the principle of cause and consequence. Because it objectifies things. As long as things stay subjective, we can't really know that they're so. But when they are objectified, that is possible. So what was previously unknown as the future is, in this process, it's rushing toward us as much as we are rushing toward it. And this is in the, you might call an event, an impact between the unknown future and the known past, where there is an objectification of that which is becoming. And the becoming is from both directions. Now, I suspect, this is only a speculation, I could give a talk on it because I've done more than speculate on it, but it is possible to control consequences from that side of things, from the outside, from the macrocosm coming toward ourselves. It's possible to control consequences as much as it is possible for us to control causes by controlling ourselves. But that is a very big thing, and it represents a kind of indirect control that is macrocosmic, and unless we are very spiritually developed, it's something that is beyond us right now. Now, there are things, we talked about some of them last night when we were talking purely about cause and consequence without astrology. There are some things that astrology, as it is right now, it cannot predict some kinds of events, such as meteors striking or imponderables that come from a dimension that are that is to us unavailable with our consciousness right now. Now, material science thinks that if they knew all of the things zooming through the sky, that they could predict meteorites. But that's a different kind of prediction. You know, there's actually even a program for that. for looking at every meteorite and every body in heaven that could possibly strike the earth. But it has just recently been suspended because they had to steal from the cookie jar when the economy went sour, and that's one of the programs they took money from. And so we'll never have science to protect us from meteorites. Putting all that aside, one point that is that we're trying to make, that neither the consciousness nor the control to take care of all destiny is available to us right now. We just do not know enough, and we have to be waked up. And that's what events of destiny do. They awaken our consciousness. We know indubitably that there is a reaction when we step on the head of the hoe or on the head of the rake and we bop ourselves in the head. We wake up. Now it's time to get back on the topic again. And we want to make another point, or we want to reiterate something that we've been talking about all along. There is an attitude to causation. We all know people that even in a much larger sense belong to a cause. They have a cause on which they are riding along and they're trying to direct it. There is also an attitude to a consequence. We're talking about a spiritual world. We're not talking about a strictly mechanical world. We're talking about a world in which there are attitudes. So there are attitudes of action and reaction, of cause and of consequence. Now, in the same way that the attitude of causation is like the cardinal signs, in that there is action, different grades of action, and it is them that it is, that's why it is a par destiny, because the cardinal sign action precipitates events. There is another kind of attitude and consciousness that is a common sign, and that consciousness and attitude suspends over cause and consequence. And it can see both sides of an issue. And in that attitude, there is more of a quality of understanding. If we're so busy doing, sometimes we don't think about what we're doing. We don't recollect our nature and ponder over things. So sometimes cardinal sign destiny in a very positive way needs common sign destiny. We're not just saying that cardinal sign destiny, we put out more clauses than we can fulfill, and then we have to be reborn in a common sign so that we can make it up in service. We're saying that sometimes we're so busy that we don't have a chance to think, and then we're reborn in a common sign so we can think and feel and ponder and theorize and do things that way. We realize that sometimes when we build up a lot of thoughts, because we don't usually just think one thought. Sometimes we think one thought and we think it over again and again and again, especially if we're Scorpios. But what happens is we build up a momentum, and that momentum results in things that have to come about. And so we have a fixed sign kind of destiny. Fixed sign destiny is not only the consequence of something dilatory. And fixed sign destiny is not only things that we must do because we have not knuckled down and learned our lesson. Fixed sign destiny is the kind of destiny that one has when one needs to hang in there without giving up, no matter what the odds are. Or if we need something to be of the highest quality and for something to be the most perfect, we're born under fixed signs because there is that kind of patience and durability, and you might even say fanatic pig-headedness to not give up until it is perfect. I lived with a musical composer at one time, a very strange musical composer that had four planets in Taurus. And it was really quite something when he was composing music. He would play the same piece over again and again and again, and he would try all kinds of alternative. He'd be going through a passage, and he'd try all kinds of alternative ways that he could do things, and he still wouldn't be happy, and then he'd go back and try more things, and he tried everything over again and again and again. And that's a real fixed sign type of perfection. Now, when we realize the folly of our, or the divine intent of our causes, when they're indubitable, we get our nose rubbed in it in the fixed signs. We know for certain that this is the way things are. So, following the lead of what Max Heindel says, which is the basis of the of these first four talks, tomorrow we'll do something a little bit different. When we left off with François Seguin, we said that this is somebody that had all of this common sign destiny, but she spent most of her life addicted to morphine, and that she had this huge fortune from being a great success as a writer, and she whittled it all away. And at the end of her life, when she said that she had no regrets for anything she did and that she didn't care, this is obviously the perfect example of what Max Heindel says, common sign destiny turns into fixed sign destiny, because we had a chance to cure some of the problems of drugs and things like that by having a very clear insight into them, but she didn't. And because she didn't, she has to learn something the hard way. And it's not for me to judge what somebody's future life is, but it certainly seems like that's the kind of road that she's going down. Now, there are a few, before we proceed into the horoscopes, there are a few things that we have to look at, because it's not clear from the way these talks have been going that I've been getting some important points across. In the first place, we have been looking at cause and consequence microscopically. We've been looking at simple, single causes. And in reality, it very rarely is that way. There are many thoughts going on at the same time. And when we have a lot of common sign destiny, we dither over many factors, and we just aren't one-pointed fix, you know, like having one thought with an idée fixe and doing it over again and again and again. It's actually quite complex. And our consequences, when we receive them, they're complex too. When an event occurs, we don't really know the real reason for that event, because it's a very complex system that we are in. Like if the event happens to be something like the Civil War, every generation comes along with a historian that has a new interpretation for the Civil War. One says it was for the freeing of the slaves, and another said that it was economic, and another says that this is what takes place in the evolution of a society, and they each add a different point. And these are things that were on the minds of all the people that precipitated and participated in the Civil War. They weren't all necessarily ponderous thinkers thinking, well, this is we're at this stage in the society, it's time to do this. But maybe people were in the South were feeling the pinch. Here we're raising cotton, and it's all being sent up north, you know, and all of the money is focused in the North, and our cotton price isn't that good. That, you know, that people could sense that sort of thing without being ponderous economic thinkers or something of that nature. So causes and consequences aren't always simple. This is what makes the spiritual life very interesting. We are not just walking a path that it's a matter of following the steps the way we follow painted steps on a dance floor when we're learning to dance. We're following something where we have to make judgments about many factors. Fortunately, if we understand some of the primary factors in a simple way, the way we're trying to do it, and we're looking at these horoscopes, and talking about them, those simple things lead to an understanding of complex issues. So we're talking about people who live for a cause. And we can say that people live by a cause, for a cause, or in a cause. And the cause can be something that's very large, and it can be multiple in its origin. If we think about it, we belong to a very enormous evolutionary creation. Even if we take the evolutionary creation that is our solar manifestation, that itself is a cause. It's an ongoing cause. At the same time, it is also an ongoing consequence. It's, in a way, it's something like our days. We wake up every morning, and when we're awake, we're filled with things that we want to do, and that's what's happening in the cosmos. The whole cosmos is waking up, and the whole cosmos is at the same time becoming creative. Now, there are some people who live for consequences, and when they live for consequences, the consequences aren't just pleasure. Because a lot of, you know, like if you feed ourselves, or if you're like me and you like chocolate, sometimes when you live for a consequence, it's something that's pleasurable, but they're not all vices. Many of the consequences that we give to ourselves are very pleasant, and they're very wholesome, and they're very important to ourselves. So there are ways that astrologically you can tell, and we're not going to go into that because that's a very deep matter, but that you can tell whether a person has a life of consequence, where they are here to learn things, experience things, and have things happen, or whether a person has a life of a cause. So by the same reasoning, we can see the whole life can be either a cause or a consequence. Sometimes our whole life is a cause, and we don't realize the consequence until the next rebirth. That's not an uncommon thing to do. You know, we usually have a mixture of all different kinds of causes. We do step on rakes and hoes, so we have that immediate kind of cause and consequence. And we have things that we set in motion a few years ago, and they come back to us and haunt us, usually in the form of illnesses or things like that. But sometimes whole lives are one great cause, or primarily one great cause. So we can't really be certain about somebody like Francois Seguin. We can't be judgmental because we don't know enough about her life. We can speculate, and that is what we're doing. We're speculating, and as long as we're honest with ourselves about the fact that we're speculating, and that we're speculating to give play or to give something for the intuition to play upon, that's all right. Eventually, through speculation, which in science is called a tentative hypothesis, it's where you come to knowledge. If you don't put forth a step and say, well, I think it's like this, you have no reference point. And a speculation or a tentative hypothesis is a reference point to that kind of thing. So we do not know whether she really did come to understanding, perhaps after her life was over, and she in spirit could look back at how she numbed herself with drugs all of her life and really wasn't aware, perhaps it did sink in enough so that in her next life things would be different. So because we don't really know, when we have intuitions about our own life, sometimes we have intuitions about other people's lives, if we don't have that all the time, we never know when there's going to be a destiny outcropping. That's one of the things that makes life beautiful. We don't know what's going to happen the next day, especially when you're dealing with human beings. You don't know what they're going to do next. In this crowd, we have a lot of very witty people, and those witty people come out with all kinds of statements, and it's made this whole affair very, very pleasant to me, because we've laughed a lot and we've had a lot of tensions relieved in the whole process of that. And that's what happens in destiny. There are a lot of unexpected things, and those unexpected things allow us to see the events anew without any presupposition. That's what happens if we let our speculations crystallize. We have presuppositions, and those are prejudices. And sometimes we take life for granted, and we become numbed ourselves in our judgmentalism. And it's really nice to expect. There is an organization that has as one of its mottos, expect a miracle. And having that kind of attitude toward destiny, even though we're trying to understand it in a very intellectual way, is a healthy thing to do. Now, because we don't know, we can't just speculate completely out of the blue. We have to have some foundation. And for us, that foundation is astrology. And astrology is a very great boon. It gives us a framework to understand things. So we just don't look at somebody and say that they're a crank, or we look at that person and they're very superficial and shallow. We can look at the horoscope and we can begin to understand some of the inner workings of that individual and what they're trying to do, what their cause in life is, and we can come to some understanding. So through astrology, we begin to understand character. And character is the residue of all of our past consequences and causes that have been distilled into the consciousness of our being. In spirit, we are pure spirit, which is pure truth. But the kinds of ways that we have experienced truth through all of the different flavors of experiences we have gives a tint or a color to our light of consciousness, and that is character. It isn't just color. There is sort of the spirit is in potential omnipotent, and the powers and abilities that we have unfolded in the spirit have character to them. If we've made some mistakes and later on have corrected them, in our character we have integrity with regard to those kinds of things because we have lived it. So when we're studying character, we're studying destiny, because what we are is what we produce. Some of it is in a very indirect way. If we're subjective and personal, we think that everything just happens to us and that God has got it in for us. But if we realize that in that indirect way, our character is in the spirit and the spirit is throughout the entire cosmos, that our spiritual attitude that emanates from our character brings about the things that happen to us. And on the basis of the history that is in character is how we interpret and understand what happens to us. Now, this is about as positive as it can be, because most people have an attitude about destiny that is fatalistic. Well, these things are going to happen because, you know, this is all set and determined. But if we realize that we can establish character in our own being and that we can experience what we want in the cosmos, and even if it's something that is so grand and imponderable that we can't control it, we can control the way we experience it, and we can control what we get out of it. And this is what we study in astrology, and this is why intuition is so important, because that set of symbols that is a horoscope is it's just so many scribbles on a piece of paper, and we can read books about it. But with intuition, we can look at those symbols and we can see them as pointers that point to something in someone's character, something that is emanating from their being because they have lived that and because they have become that. That's why astrology is not purely a science. There's a scientific element to it. It is a spiritual science. It is a spiritual science that gives us a way to focus our intuition so that we can know what character is. All right, none of that's in the notes, but I don't know. So it happens that way once in a while. At least I didn't have a soapbox that I stepped on. One of the characteristics of the common or mutable or double-bodied signs is repetition. And repetition is one of the most basic tools of elementary education, which is ruled by the third house, the opportunities for elementary education, which is abstractly ruled by Gemini. Repetition, repetition, repetition. I'm going through an an elementary education process right now. I'm trying to learn another language. And I do it by doing a lot of repetitions, because that's what happened when we were kids. We didn't remember all the times that we heard a word or that we heard a phrase or a turn of words or something like that. We heard it again and again and again, and it sank into us and it became part of our being. And that's a very good way to learn elementary things. Now, following the thesis of Max Heindel, who probably derived it from reading many past lives in the memory of nature, we said that a person who is brought to rebirth with a lot of common sign accentuation, it is that way so that they can make it up through vicarious service to the person rather than having to experience the same kind of harsh destiny that that person experienced as a result of our preemptive causal activity that was not really duly thought out. So common signs have a strong orientation towards service, and service destiny is the kind of destiny that we can make it up. We don't have to have the direct experience. We can read about all sorts of things so that when we do come to using a piece of equipment like Jerry is using now, because if we've read the manual, we know what to do, and it isn't poking around in the dark kind of thing. Now, in these talks, we've said that there are deeper purposes in our evolution. We're talking in these first four talks only about one kind of trajectory through destiny. We could have taken a different one and done it in a different way. But we've come to understand that when we're too focused on doing, we're not focused enough on understanding. And when we're focused too much on thinking or understanding or something like that, we're not standing in there for the things that we need to do. And that's one of the things that the common sign repetition, when that repetition is alibi or excuses or something like that, necessitates fixed sign destiny. So we can see that a life with a lot of fixed sign accentuation may very well be the result of negligence. And it may be a life that forces one to do something that they cannot shirk. It could be both. It could be the repetition of a virtue many times so that we really make it a rhythmic part of our being. All of these things are potentialities. What I'm trying to say is one of the great faults of astrology is that we too often we learn astrology out of books, and people, when they work with horoscopes, they go to books, and those books are distilled experience from the people that write the books, but then they have the same interpretation for the same thing every time. And that's not so. People are not like that. People don't do the same thing every time. And each person is different from the last person, and so we can't say that every time we see somebody with a big fixed sign destiny that they've been a shirker in the past. We can't say that. That's not fair. We have to look at it from many different ways and not just have one. It might be somebody with a fixed sign destiny that is trying to get to fundamental profundities, axiomatic things, things that are at the basis of things. That's what a fixed sign does very well. Talking about the type of person like St. Paul or Max Heindel who could do something that had the integrity of character that they never gave up about something. And that's the value. You know, so it isn't that you're forced to do something, but it's that you have the character that you don't give up. If you have such an individual, it is the principle that counts. So fixed sign people might very well be highly principled people. Okay, now let's start looking at some horoscopes. And again, I must tell you, these are three horoscopes of three people. That's very difficult for me. And I made a mistake. I thought that we'd have the same number of people as we had yesterday. It turns out we have many people, and so you're going to have to share these horoscopes. I can print some out later on if you want them. Thank you. probably you're not going to know only one of the, you're probably going to know only one of the people in these horoscopes. Yeah. Maybe we come out not so badly after all. All right, the horoscope, the first horoscope is for Augusta Voss Heindel. You probably don't know Augusta Voss Heindel unless you're a member of the Rosicrucian Fellowship. She is the wife of the founder, Max Heindel, the person whose horoscope we looked at in the first talk. Now, before talking about this, I have to make a disclaimer. I'm going to be speaking only from astrology and only from anecdotes. I'm not going to be speaking from a knowledge of all of her destiny. Now, I don't have anything against Mrs. Heindel, but I certainly do not agree with all of her actions and all of the stands that she had in the Rosicrucian Fellowship. I don't think she was a really benign figure for our organization. Now, in the first talk, we talked about an anecdote about Max Heindel having been in a spiritual order in her immediately precedent life and seeing that there were things that were done wrong, that the order was not living right, that there was corruption within it, and there was not truly spiritual living, and he was very vociferous and spoke out and took action, and the order had very strong power in terms of the world. It had strong power, and he became sort of an enemy of the order. And it was an enemy that they felt needed to be destroyed, and they set dogs after him. And after a while of being chased by dogs, he supposedly ended up at someone who was a, how would you call it, a worldly wise person, somebody who had folk knowledge, herbalism, and things of that nature. And supposedly that person who helped him and gave him refuge for a temporary while was reborn as Augusta Voss Heindel in this life. Now, only Mercury and Neptune are cardinal in this horoscope. Four planets are fixed, and four planets are in common signs, and the angles are split between cardinal and fixed. So it's a reasonably fixed chart. It's a fixed ascendant. Now, this does not appear to be a chart where a person is born in a fixed sign because they were negligent in the past life. And the reason I think that is so is if we look at Mars. Mars is a pretty strong planet in this horoscope. It trines the Sun, it sextiles Neptune, and so that's a pretty strong outing right there. And because Mars is strong and positive, it means that she has developed the kind of destiny that she likes to work. She isn't someone that will just lay back. And because there are so many things elevated, and there are so many things in the ninth and tenth houses, it shows that this is probably a person who is of deep principle, somebody who has a very philosophical bent, even though some of the works or the things that came out of that were not especially so. Now, this is somebody that probably, because of the fixed sign nature, could be fixed and stubborn, because the luminaries, the Sun and the Moon, square Pluto, which show a kind of stubborn obsessiveness. And we know this about human nature, especially when there are fixed signs involved. A person takes a course against something. Her husband had just died, and she was wanting, she's very oriented toward her husband because the Sun and the Moon are both in the West. And so this is somebody that teams up and has their consciousness in terms of the other. The Sun is very close to the seventh house cusp, and so her significant other has passed away, And suddenly, there is the authority of a board. And the power and authority of that board is indicated by the 10th house. And thinking that she is representing her significant other, she sets herself against that, against the powers that be, so to speak. And because Mars is strong, and because she's talented in martial ways, she not only gets entrenched, she fights. And when you fight from an entrenched position, you become even more entrenched. And this is the kind of thing that takes place. Mercury trines Pluto. She's an absolutist. So she thinks that her thoughts, because they are absolute and completely universal, are true. But the difference between the thought of for Mercury and Pluto is very different from the attitude or the opinion that comes from the sun and moon square to Pluto. And this is the kind of thing that she had to work with. If we look at the common sign part of this horoscope, it indicates that repetition played a very large part in all of this. And a lot of the repetition was a rehearsing in her inner consciousness, a romantic view of things, especially in a woman's chart. The square of Venus to Uranus indicates a romanticism, high-blown romanticism. And so we can see, this is a way of interpreting this chart, that we can see what was going on in her consciousness, where some people just considered her a kind of a fundamentalist that had a skewed view of Max Heindel and insisted on doing things in a religious way rather than in a philosophical way. Now, she did make progress in soul growth, because I have known people that knew her personally, and she did unfold some superphysical faculties. The Neptune-Mars indicates that she had some healing abilities, and she had the ability to direct spiritual energies. So she is, in some ways, she is a pig-headed fighter, and in some ways, she has spiritual capacities, a brilliant mind, and the struggle between all of them leads to a life that was basically a standoff. It's very interesting that after all of the struggles that she had within the organization, her side won. But they had to lose, because they had nobody that had the capacity to have the organization continue to run. On her side, she had to invite back people from the other side. And there's poetic justice and things like that. All right, let's quickly, we're taking way too long. We're close to being overstayed already. Let's look at the next horoscope. The next horoscope is the horoscope of Jerry Falwell. And this is another horoscope that it's difficult for me to work with, because I dislike the outward person of Jerry Falwell. He tends to be self-righteous. He tends to be smug. And probably the reason that I dislike the outward personality is because I tend to be self-righteous and smug. It's easy to project, and it's easy to see your faults in other people. Now, this is a horoscope. This is a very mixed horoscope. This is a horoscope that is a mixture of that is very difficult to set out. Now, Jerry Falwell is a twin, and his brother is called Eugene. Now, if you want to get a very interesting take on Jerry and Gene, there are a set of novels that they're by Clive Edgerton, and they're set in Carolina. And it talks about a pair of twins running a religious college. The books are called Walking Across Egypt And the one that deals with the twins and the way they do things is a novel called Killer Diller. They're great reading, and if you want a relief from life into some fiction that has good understanding to it, I certainly suggest or recommend Walking Across Egypt and Killer Diller. Now, this is the horoscope of a man who's accomplished. And it's also the horoscope of a man who is virtuous. It's not like the other guy in Louisiana, who's the one that's gotten caught a couple of times being with hookers? Yeah, Jimmy Swaggart. I like Jimmy Swaggart, but he's not morally accomplished. He's a sinner saint, and I'm a sinner saint, and I can love that kind of a person. Now, this is a person that is gifted. Mars is sextile the sun. And he is a born again, but before he was a born again, he was a big time ball player. And when he had his born again experience, he gave up the opportunity of playing for the St. Louis Cardinals in order to go to Bible seminary. So we're not talking about somebody that gets by in a sleazy way by appearing to be a moralist and such like that, though there's some of that in him. We're talking about somebody that has ability. If we looked at, he's often swamped by emotional opinions. We're talking now about the sun being square to the moon. There's a lot of opinionation in there, and there's a lot of emotionality. And that's so the ability to execute isn't always available to him. He can't make up his mind, and he gets opinions, and those opinions sort of paralyze him from being able to act because in the Sun-Mars way. Normally, when we act, we're clean. You can't be acting, what? Oh, I'm sorry, Moon Square Mercury. Moon Square Mercury, the frozen opinion. Normally, when we act, we're clean. But when we paralyze ourselves and we can't act because we're stuck on a point, things stagnate. This is why the kinds of problems and the kinds of faults that are in fixed sign people are very different than those in cardinal sign people. You know, like an Aries says, let's have it out. Fighting is good, clean fun, and it clears it up. But if things are locked together and there is no possibility for change, things can stagnate or they can harden or crystallize quite easily. Now, he's a very brilliant man with strong aspects, and this is 4 minutes from being an exact aspect, the square of Mercury to Moon, with strong aspects, there is a talent there, even if the talent is misused. This is somebody that when he was going through school, several times skipped grades. And on top of that, was always at the top of his class. But you can be very bright, but if your thoughts are not based in spiritual truth, you can defend very brightly, you can defend wrong opinions, and this is something that happens with Jerry Falwell. It is a matter of misinterpretation. Now, he believes in moral purity. He has Pluto in the ninth, and it sextiles Venus conjoined Jupiter. Jupiter trine Pluto is always a force for moral good. There's no doubt that the world is a better place for Jerry Falwell because he is a force for the good, even if his conceptions are misconceptions. You can see what he's having to deal with. He feels he's right. He has a knowledge of what he knows to be good, but it doesn't necessarily, and he has intelligence that he can understand some things, But it is that it doesn't mean that he necessarily understands ultimate truth. And it's pretty clear that he doesn't understand ultimate truth. So these are indubitable virtues, indubitable talent. But what do they serve? They serve opinion. He's not really a deep person. Now, this is a problem that we find that takes place in society a lot. I've gone around and I like visiting Pentecostals because they have spiritual experience. And I have even talked to Pentecostals, you have to be very, very careful how you do it, about what it is like when they have the experience of the Holy Spirit. And I have even gotten people who have had the experience of the Holy Spirit to agree that when they're having that experience, it is very much akin to when they solve a mathematical problem and they get the idea. Only the idea is of themselves as God. Now, if a person is a born-again person and has living spiritual experience, especially if it's in pictures, as it is in this case, because the moon is trine Neptune, it indicating a pictorial consciousness, they have something that's real, that's live. They've had a spiritual experience, and they may have a number of them. But they don't realize that that spiritual experience is not second nature because they've grown to be very spiritual. That experience is there to cure them of something. And what my experience is that it is usually there to cure people of fundamentalism. It's sort of like if you have an illness. You have a fever and you sweat out all kinds of icky stuff when you're ill. And the fever is curing you and you're sweating that stuff out. Well, fundamentalism, or the fixity in a materialistic way, is what the person, the born again experience or the Pentecostal experience is like the fever, and it's driving out the fundamentalism. But there's resistance, and he hangs on to the fundamentalism, and that's where his real problem is. This is one of the things of a fixed sign existence. Conversion experiences, extreme conversion experiences, are not uncommon in fixed signs. But most people do not realize why they have them. It's because they're recalcitrant. They're not progressive and forward-looking in their spiritual growth, and this is what they need. So because this is a hard... Now, if we were to try to judge, which we don't have that big of a consciousness, it's very hard to judge what the future of this person is going to be in the next life, because so much good has been done, and he has gotten people to appreciate and enjoy living good lives. He's made friends. This is the kind of person that you'd want as a friend. You look at Venus conjoined Jupiter in Virgo, that's somebody that's a really good friend. They're relaxed, and they care about you, and they're demonstrative. So he's done something really well there, but he's gotten involved with power, and he has, what would you call it? I guess you'd call it sophistry, when you use your mind to defend a theology that is not necessarily so. So is he a bad man? No, he's certainly not a bad man, but he doesn't progress things. Does he serve the adversary? No, he doesn't serve the adversary, but some of his things might be taken advantage of in that way. But he doesn't really serve the highest good either, because he can't, because he has his opinions, his mental opinions that are to him so bright, they are an impediment for him to have continuous and ongoing understanding in spiritual experience. So it's a complex man and very hard to judge. Now, we're just about to be overstayed, so let's look at the last horoscope. This is a precursor to what we're going to talk about tomorrow, where tomorrow one of the horoscopes is the horoscope of another transsexual, and we're going to have a horoscope of a hermaphrodite tomorrow. We're sticking with the really common people. All right. Now, I'm having to deal with another thing of which I am uncomfortable. And I'm going to say things that are capable of being misunderstood because we're talking about issues that can be highly charged, and highly charged issues can lead to misunderstanding. And please think about where I'm coming from and what I'm really saying, because I don't want to be misunderstood and seen as a bigot or something like that. Bigot. My mouth is a spigot, but I don't think I'm a bigot. All right. Now, there are a lot of astrologers that have systems for talking about past lives and future lives, and those systems usually don't work. They're not reliable. And usually what I find when people have systems of that nature, especially when they become shorthand systems, they're gimmicks. And they're gimmicks for used as a substitute for thinking. Because thinking is hard work, and sometimes trying to understand what a spiritual being is doing in a given rebirth is not an easy matter. It's a hard kind of thing. You know, we are very creative people, and we are people that are capable of all kinds of different things. And for this reason, there is a lot of irregularity in our human life wave. Our human life wave stretches all the way from the anthropoid apes, not the monkeys, but the anthropoid apes are part of us. And it stretches all the way to people who are great initiates. So there's quite a bit of variety there, just in the degree of wakingness, not to say all of the different flavors of consciousness that there are among us. Another reason is that from our very fall, we have a vestigial rebelliousness and disobedience in us. And we are indeed a stiff-necked people, and we're going to want to do our own things. And sometimes with our rebelliousness, we do things despite the law. That's the kind of egoism that we have. And another reason why all the differences is our creativity. We're individualistic enough to want to disregard the norm and to work in harmony with everything that else is going on because we want to do our creative things. And so we do. So astrology is not a set thing. And there is no way of telling what's going to happen to a person in the next life unless you have that divine seership that you can see these kinds of things directly. So we have to be intuitive, and intuitive to understand, to get to some principle that we can use to understand. It helps to know on what a principle is founded. For example, one of the results found in a large past life study participated in by Max Heindel and described in the book Web of Destiny, he reports there that one of the findings is that people who lie a lot in one life have many illnesses in the next rebirth. And it's not clear what he says about what he's really saying. He doesn't say whether these illnesses are due to other past destiny. He doesn't say whether the illnesses are superficial, like mumps or some other childhood conditions. But it is based on a principle. And the principle is that our lives, when we come to rebirth, begin with thought. In our daily life, thoughts provoke desires, and desires provoke actions, and actions produce events. And this is the same course that is followed when we come to rebirth. The spirit has been in third heaven, It has been with itself, as a spiritual being, and it has seen the entire picture of the purpose of the cosmos. It's not like looking at a photographic picture, and it's filled with the desire to participate. And so that desire to be causes it to come to rebirth. And so the first thing that happens is that there is thought. The life is thought out, and one creates what is called the creative archetype, which is the thought of the life. And that thought shares other thought forms, like thought forms of the plants and animals and or the society that we're going to be in. And so we think our life out first. Now, if a person is a liar in one life, they have accustomed themselves to thinking in terms of things which are untrue. And when a person thinks something is untrue, when that same person comes to think out their next life and produce the form with their body in, it's that thought form of their body is going to have a lot of untruths in it. And that is going to make it more susceptible to many different kinds of illnesses. So this is a very simplified version of how the cosmos is, the concrete cosmos is created and progressed by our participation in recreation each time we come to birth. And it gives us an answer why some things in our personal participation in the cosmos are not perfect. Now, in times when we are advanced as we are now, there are even great amounts of autonomy that we have in our lives. And we can't say that all of the different parts of our being have to some degree of autonomy. Like if we take suspended animation, for example, if a person is in some kind of a coma, the vital body just takes over on its own and it maintains the physical body. And we all know that we have desires that come from our lower nature and the desire body that are autonomous. We, the spirit, don't want them to happen, but because we really haven't taken control of ourselves and of our lives, they come to pass despite the fact that the spirit doesn't want them to happen. You know, I didn't mean that. That's a thing that we hear that many times in life. Now, if we understand this principle, the principle of truth and things like that, it helps, and how that works in being true to life, we can understand many applications of this. For example, if we become true thinkers, even in as simple a way as drawing a picture of something, sketching it, we see what's really there, and we attune our lives to the truth. If we practice being logically consistent, we produce for ourselves a future that is more true and that we can understand reality and gain much more from the experiences and have the experiences of things as they really are. There is nothing that, all of these principles are perfectly applicable. In fact, in the Rosicrucian philosophy, we're supposed to look at things in our bodies that are not perfect, that could be better. Recently, I've had a lot of trouble with my eyes, and I've had 3 operations on one eye. And you can believe that in my next life, I'm going to be very careful about how I build the eye. I'm going to keep that in mind, because sense perception is the way that we interact with the world and get to know it. Now, because there are no general laws, it's possible for a person to be born with the same horoscope several times. A person can get stuck. They can get crystallized. And what we're looking at is what I believe to be one of those kinds of horoscopes. This is somebody who's likely to be reborn very similar to the way the person is in this rebirth. This is the horoscope of Nancy Ladens, whose birth name was Grislock. William Grislock. He or she was a Catholic priest and was ambivalent about his sexuality, uncertain. The ambivalence about his basic being is shown in the sun opposite Saturn. He has doubts about himself. He's just not sure of himself at all. So what he did is he left the priesthood in order to become married, because he felt that if he married, he would prove to himself once and for all that he was a man. Didn't work. What happened is, in a few years later, he has what he calls an appointment with destiny, in which he decided that he really was a woman and not a man, which is kind of unfair to his wife, I imagine. But what he did is had a sex change operation and became Nancy Ladens. And he now lives somewhere in New Mexico. So the sun opposite Saturn indicates somebody who's unhappy with himself. He's unsure of himself, and of all things, he's ignorant about himself. And his ignorance about himself is much more than he suspects. Now, this is, again, a very fixed sign horoscope. We have Saturn in a fixed sign. We have Moon in a fixed sign. We have Jupiter in a fixed sign. We have the Sun in a fixed sign. We have Mercury and the Ascendant in a fixed sign. This is a very fixed person. He's in the 12th house, meaning he's living in the past. He's focused in the past, and in the past he probably was in a female body. And he was in a female body that he identified with very strongly. But when he came back to birth this time, as is usually the case, he was reborn as a male. And we're usually born alternately as male and female so that we can go through each of the ages. Like right now, we're in the age of Pisces, and then we're coming to the age of Aquarius. And in that 2,000-year period, we get at least one time as a male and one time as a female so that we can understand the Piscean background both from a male and female point of view. Now, that's one of those things that you can't say that every time we're born alternately male and female and so on. But that's a general principle. What happens here is he's very fixed. He's very fixed, and he's still living in that past, or she, I don't know what to call it, a he or a she, because it's very hard to say. Huh? And so there's a kind of cosmic stubbornness in the character. Now, that cosmic stubbornness is indicated most by the Moon in Taurus, square to Jupiter, conjoined Mercury, conjoined the Ascendant. And this pattern represents a gigantic alibi. It's an alibi that is a very materialistic philosophy. And it's an alibi that is so hard that that this person believes it is the will of God. Now, he does have Venus sextile to Uranus. Venus and Mars both sextile to Uranus, which indicates he probably does have a lot of female hormones in his body. And those female hormones are issued from the vital body, and the vital body, the inner feminine vital body, is probably very, very strong in this person. Now, all of these things are experiences that we make. You know, we can't do anything if everything is in a perfect state of balance. If everything is homeostatically balanced, we don't do anything. But when we change the balance, or when we break from balance, is when we make changes and when things are accomplished. However, if we deviate too far in our imbalance, we toss things up so much that it's difficult to do anything. Because even if we're going forward, we go forward better if we're balanced. You know, you can't even go forward on a bicycle unless you have some degree of balance. Now, as I see it, having a sex change operation is not a sin. Having a sex change operation is an act of freedom. But it is certainly a questionable way to express freedom. And it is probably an extremely rebellious way to express freedom. What he calls his appointment with destiny is a mockery of destiny. He wasn't destined to become a female. He chose this as a voluntary choice. And it comes close to blasphemy to say that God made a mistake by putting him in a masculine body. The divine and the agents of destiny, the recording angels, do not make mistakes like that. So it's perfectly fine for him to be who he is and be what he is, and he has the freedom to do what he wants to do, but that doesn't mean that he hasn't made a gigantic mistake. And I believe because of that, the mistake is going to perpetuate itself. Now, the moon is in the degree of the zodiac where Algol is located. And Algol is in the Medusa's head. And we know from mythology that when Perseus took the head of Medusa, he put it in the purse that would accommodate anything of any size, which was imagination. The imagination can be as small as an atom or as large as the cosmos, and he put the head in there, and every time someone saw the head, they froze. They were turned to stone. They crystallized. So this gigantic alibi, this gigantic rationalization of the moon being square to Jupiter and Mercury, it has the precipitate quality of the star Algol, which is saying that this is somebody that is freezing and stopping destiny. And because of what I think is a giant cosmic mistake, I could be wrong about this, because of this is a giant cosmic mistake, the irony or the poetic destiny, poetic justice of destiny is going to make it such that he's probably going to have to repeat something like this life all over again, because not because he's being taught a lesson, but because he has crystallized something and hardened something so much that it is hard to progress forward. And so that's the kind of lesson you have to learn. You have to do it over again, all over. There have been some interesting science fiction movies of that nature that treat just that very thing. So when we look at the arguments that are given about these sorts of things, they're usually red herring issues. And we get distracted by rationalizations that deny the facts. And the fact is what you're born into. Yes, it's a very imbalanced way of being born in, and yes, there probably was a great deal of femininity in his masculine body, but it is the fact is that it was still a masculine body. Okay, this is as much as I wanted to say about this, because now we have looked at all three types of destiny: cardinal destiny, common destiny, and fixed destiny. And tomorrow we're going to look at something else with regard to astrology and destiny and past lives and things like that. And we're going to try to get some other understandings. And we're going to find some intricate. We're going to start out looking at another transsexual, and we'll find some very interesting connections. Yes. You're the only one, I believe, beside myself that has read those books. The Walking Across Egypt and Killer Diller. Now, does it make now can you go back and think about those books? And yes, very, very. Let's close with the Rosicrucian prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight. O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. All right, now we have questions. Now, we have a big break because Earl is on the mend and he hopes to be here tomorrow, but he will not be here for his talk, and we won't have a talk until 3:30 when Edgar gives his talk. In the meantime, there is food in the refrigerator. You don't get away without a hug.
Okay. 10:04.
Sorry.
That's okay. Just a quick one. Right before you left Jerry Falwell's, you said something about his mental opinion being so bright that he bought into it. He believed it.
Yes.
Was that indicated? Would that be
the brightness is from the exactness of the aspect. A square is a talent just as much as a prime is a talent. And when you find a very acute aspect, it can be worked in many different ways.
Is that Mercury,
yes.
Too, of Uranus?
Now, like in some horoscopes, squares, people are capable of making very positive things out of squares. For example, there is a square of Mercury to Saturn and Jupiter in the horoscope of Isaac Newton. And he used that square, the square of Mercury to Jupiter, turned out to be the differential calculus, and the square of Mercury to Saturn turned out to be the differential calculus, and the square of Mercury to Jupiter turned out to be the integral calculus. And that's the case where you can use the principle of the squares in a thoroughly positive way. A square does not necessarily have to mean a nil talent. Like a Saturn, suppose somebody has a Saturn and Neptune squared to Mercury. That's a sensitivity, but it's sort of a dark sensitivity. And that might be the sensitivity of a safecracker. You can feel all the tumblers fall, but choose somebody who chooses it to use it to an immediate end. And that's what I'm saying appears to be the case with the Saturn-Pluto's the Pluto Mercury square in the Falwell chart. All right.
Well, let her go first.
Okay.
Mine's longer.
Okay, this is a question about the maybe. You said the recording angels don't make mistakes.
Correct.
And you mentioned hermaphrodites. Are they considered mistakes or just a challenge for the person to live with?
No, I don't think they're either. They are a challenge, and I don't think they're a mistake. I think that they represent a kind of genius. I think they represent a kind of consciousness that is trying to make what we are going to be in the future in a spiritual way, a male-female way. But if one precipitates a body, it doesn't take much of a deviation between having internal masculine organs and external masculine organs. And if you are too fetched with an idea, or if your focus of consciousness when you come to the birth is slightly knocked or kilter, you produce that kind of condition. There no doubt is some kind of ambivalence about identification with male or female. This is why it's so important to live a spiritual life, because the spirit is both male and female and other things as well. And if there's too much identification with one gender or another, it's like being a Republican or a Democrat. You're only half a person. And if you identify with a gender, then you're a feminist to an end that you're not a balanced whole person. And if you approach things spiritually, the spirit is parasexual, you might say. It's on the
sexual. So in essence, this is a little bit of like they say male and female are each incomplete. And theoretically, God is complete because he's not separated, but whatever.
Right.
But this is sort of, you know, like a combination of both factors.
This is what happens when you take things materialistically.
Okay, and would this be a result of that soul's previous life, or would it have anything to do with the thoughts of the mother as to what sex she wanted the baby to be?
It would probably vary from case to case, but certainly those would be factors. That's why you have to look at each particular horoscope. Astrology is different than statistics. Statistics say there's a likelihood of being like this or a likelihood of being like that. But astrology deals with a different kind of knowledge. It's not a matter of whether, you know, there's a 95% chance that you aren't going to be in an automobile accident. But if you think about your life and your body, you wonder, am I in the 5% or am I in the 95%?
The more you think about that, the more likely it is to happen.
You want the distinct knowledge.
You want to know whether you are going to be someone who has an accident or who doesn't have an accident. And with the horoscope, it's tailor-made. It represents the archetype out of which your whole body and life has been made, and it is specific in that.
Okay, the reason I asked that second question is that my younger son, the one who died, I had wanted a girl the first time, and I got a boy. And being a dressmaker, I wanted a girl. So the second time, I really, really wanted a girl.
Yes.
And he ended up having a testicle that never, ever came down.
Yes.
So would any of that have been my fault? Because it apparently didn't bother
him. Yes, you probably did participate in it. And the way you would determine that, how much of a participation would be, look at the 12th house close to the ascendant. I've mentioned cases where I've worked...
My 12th house or his 12th house?
His 12th house.
Okay.
Because those are the conditions immediately before birth. And I have seen horoscopes where the father hated the fact that this child was coming to birth and they had Saturn conjoined the ascendant. They had a hard time throughout life, and it was because of the relationship with the father. Because the father wanted to go to law school, and he got the mother pregnant, and then there went law school out the window, and he just resented that, and that affected the whole relationship between parent and child, and that was indicated by things right above the ascendant, right before the moment of birth, meaning the prenatal epoch. Ah, see, That's right above the 12th house. That's the sun in the 12th house.
The sunrise that day is 5:27. He was born at 5:32. So
yeah, that's where first place I would begin to look. Yes.
Okay, I have to.
Okay, Ariel, finally.
Just quick.
You know, this is all very...
The Bisquick is in...
Yeah, I want the biscuits! I just am so fascinated by sexuality.
Totally.
And people with sex changes, and I've known people, and they've been real mind-benders, having dinner with sex-changed people. And a man, you know, falls in love with a woman, and she's going to become a man, and he's already a woman, and it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I was talking about. With myself, I've always looked at, I love my woman's body. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I loved my periods when I had them. I loved everything about being a woman. But there's that man in there that's always pushing around and very, very conscious and aware there's a male inside.
Yes.
And I don't think ill of it,
yeah.
But it's there. Where does that come from?
It's because you are probably somebody that did extremely well as a male in a past life, so much so that it was an overblow into this one. And such is the case, it's a good idea to marry yourself. Meaning to say that the female part of yourself falls in love with the male part and wants a union, so that you are a whole being in that way, rather than constantly trying to fight, am I a male or a female, because that, again, produces a difference that is internally separative, and it produces, you know, horrible internal divisions. But if you have an internal marriage, that's very, very, very wholesome kind of thing. Eventually, the way it works, that's what happens anyway, because it's called the alchemical wedding, when the higher part of us, which expresses through the vital body, and the vital body is always the opposite sex, you know, for you it would be the prince, Prince Charming unites with the personality, and this is when the divine and the personal human become as one. And so what you're struggling with is you're struggling with how to consummate that union in a way that is spiritual rather than it just being, you know, like there are men and women that, you know, that have the battle of the sexes going on. You're trying to complete something that is divine, and you're trying to become a whole being.
Yeah, and you know, growing up, it was very hard because people would say, and even up until before I was 50, they'd go, excuse me, sir, you know, when I would go in the woman's room, and I would always go like this, excuse me, and, you know, push my breasts out. And I would think, what is it? And then, you know, of course I know sexuality is energetic anyway. It's not
that
physical.
That brings up a story. You and I have a number of friends who are lesbians. And one of them is quite articulate, and she can describe situations that come up. And she was, I'll leave out some of the parts that are difficult. She has different stories. One was at B.B. Clark Beach, where these women were liberating the beach and going topless. And the police officer comes up to the woman, and he nervously says, would you please cover your genitals? Her breasts were out. And she said, they're not genitals, they're secondary sex characteristics like your beard. When you cover your head, I'll cover my breasts. And another one was...